Session number 11717, Mr. Charles Birch.
Whereabouts were you born, Mr. Birch?
Bishop's Waltham.
Where's that?
Hampshire.
Near Southampton?
Yes, 10 miles from here.
What did your father do for a living?
I don't know.
Where did you go to school?
Bishop's Waltham.
And how old were you when you left?
I left Bishop's Waltham when I was 12, and I came to live at West End. That's about a mile from here, 2 miles from here. And I left school when I was 14.
What job did you take up then?
Farm labour, on the farm.
So how did you come to be in the army?
Well, I joined the Territorials when I was 16. And I left the Territorials and joined the Regulars when I was 17, for 12 years. And from there I went to Woolwich, done my training at Woolwich.
In the Royal Artillery?
Royal Artillery, and went to Balfour Camp. From Balfour Camp, we went to Newport, Monmouthshire. War broke out, and I went across to France September the 3rd, 1939.
With which unit did you go?
Royal Artillery.
Do you remember the name of the unit?
Yeah, 33rd Field.
Were you at Dunkirk?
I was. Yes.
Can you tell me what happened to you at Dunkirk?
Well, we... same as everybody else, we were in the water. And we came back on the 2nd of June, 1940.
You were in a queue of troops in the water,
were
you?
Oh, yes, yes.
Were you fired at?
Oh, yes, fire, shot at and all the rest of it, yes. Same as everybody else.
How long were you waiting in the sea?
Well, on the beach about 2 days, I suppose. Yeah.
Did you think that you'd get off?
Well, same as everybody else, just take your chance.
How did people behave in getting into the boats? Was it a scramble or orderly?
Orderly. There was no panic whatsoever. You just took your turn.
Which boat picked you up?
That I couldn't tell you. It was night time.
Was it a warship or a...
I couldn't tell you at all. I couldn't even tell you the name of the ship. And I don't think, tell you the truth, I don't think anybody could tell you really what the ship was called. You've just got on the ship and you got on it. That's all there is to it.
Had you been in any fighting in France?
Oh, only just when we were on the retreat back from France, from Belgium. Oh, yes.
Were you on a gun?
Oh, yes. No, I was the driver in the observation post with the officers.
So you weren't operating a gun?
No. I was a gunner, but I wasn't on the front. No, I was the driver taking the officers to the front to observation post. And then he sent from the observation, they sent the directions back to the guns.
What condition were you in when you got back to Britain after Dunkirk?
Well, I'll say anybody else went through.
Tired?
Oh, yes.
Did you have a rifle?
No.
Because
most of them just dumped them. We dumped all their rifles, we dropped all the guns up, everything.
But you'd had a Lee-Enfield.
No. I didn't have a gun. I was a driver in a van.
How did you come to be in SOE then?
Well, it's a long. In 1942. On their regimental orders, volunteers with a working knowledge of French. Well, I couldn't speak a word of French, but I just put my name in for it.
Why did you do that?
Just nothing to do.
Out of boredom?
Yeah, boredom. Well, I said boredom. I got a letter. I had to go to report to Captain Gypsum in London. And apparently I was accepted.
What do you remember about meeting Captain Jepson?
Well, he just asked you different questions and that, you know, what you were and that sort of it. And that was it. I knew way about France from 1939 and 40 before Dunkirk. And I whether that helped or not, because I was a car driver, see, for the officers. But, and I was accepted. And
did you know what you were letting yourself in
for?
No,
not really, no. And then beginning 1943... I told to pack my gear, and report to Baker Street. That's her headquarters, the SOE.
Do you remember when you had this interview with Selwyn Jepson?
Well, somewhere in 1942, that's all I can tell you.
What happened when you reported to Baker Street?
Well, that is where I saw Gordon, the rest of the other three sergeants.
That was Gordon, Ornable,
and Bob Paul and Jock Graham, the four sergeants. Well, we weren't sergeants then, we were other ranks, first on me.
You were a private, weren't you?
Private, oh yes.
A gunner.
That's one bit there, yeah. Unpaid. And then from there we were taken down to Dorking. From Dorking at the Box Hill. That's our school, training school. And that's when we started doing our training with the officers.
What kind of training was that?
Well, Morse code, codes, silent killing, pistol shooting, you name it, we done it. Parachute training.
What was the silent killing? Can you describe what
involved? Oh, yes, just sort of knocking them in that and, you know. Same as commando training, put it that way, shall we? And then...
You'd hit people with the side of your hand?
Yeah.
Whereabouts would you hit them?
Right, the back of the neck. And then from there we went to Scotland, to Malleg.
What was the difference of the training at Malleg from
Box
Hill?
Well, we had to do explosives. And all the rest of their explosives and whatnot, and throwing out trains, you know. Then from there we came back to Manchester, Ringway, and done their parachute jumps.
Did you have any problems with any of the training?
No, nothing at all, no.
Did you enjoy it?
Oh, golly me, yeah. It was all good fun, matter of fact. We were letting ourselves in for the time.
How did you take to parachuting?
All right. We do all our parachute at the bottom of the ground. No, we don't jump at the side. We drop from the bottom of the Halifax bombers.
Were there any accidents on the training?
No, nothing at all, no.
Were you given the chance to pull out if you wanted to?
No, it wasn't even theirs. We just done the training.
Did you feel like pulling out?
No. I said, we enjoyed ourselves. It's all fun. Oh, by the way, we got promoted four sergeants. By the way.
You were what?
All promoted four sergeants we were. All of us given sergeants. But when we did our parachute training, we went, come back to Box Hill, but we were sent on leave. We come back now, say we started training for the first job of blowing at the canal gates at St. Quentin. 10 of them.
Can you tell me about the plan for this operation, what it was supposed to be?
We done all our training at Kennington Docks in London, at Canal Gates. There's going to be two to put explosives on the gates, and the rest of us doing it sort of standing by for anybody querying us. Like, no, I was issued with a Sting gun. But we'd done that for about a week, every night for about a week. That's right. And then...
How many of you were supposed to be in this party?
Ten. Six officers and four sergeants.
And what was your own job in the
I was just with a Sting gun. Just in case anybody sort of... come rain, you know. And then we went to the air drum to go over there, but we couldn't because the climate was either bad, either one way or the other, the wind and that, see. But on the third night when we couldn't go, the message came back, don't come, they're waiting for you. So we opened their mouth. The trap had been sprung, so we couldn't go.
So you never went on that operation?
No, we couldn't do it. We didn't, see. We'd have all been caught. They're waiting for us.
And was Hugh Dormer to head that operation?
Oh, yes.
Can you tell me about Hugh Dormer, what kind of a chap he was?
Well, I mean, he's very religious. He's a good man. No, nothing about him at all. But it's just, see, to me, I mean, I'm not religious, if you understand me. I don't go to church every Sunday, but he was too religious.
How did you know he was so religious?
Well, when we escaped, he always believed in God. You know, that was God's fault. He's helping all the time. You know, but I mean, he's all right, but. Of course, we're different total cheese. He was an officer and a gentleman. I'm just only.
How did you get on with him?
All right. I got on all right. Oh, yes. So, I think we were together for about... anyway, I'll tell you about that later on the other job. But when we escaped, when we did that, the other job, we were together for 37 days altogether.
Can we go on to the other job now and can you tell me about...
I say that job, that job we couldn't do. So we went back on leave again, came back to Box Hill, and we're going to do the job that they tried to do before. They couldn't do it before because they had bad accidents on landing, you know. So we started training for that job. We dropped over and went over there on the 16th and 17th of August 1943.
How did you get across?
Parachute.
What kind of a plane?
Halifax bomber.
Can you describe what the journey was like?
Well, all right. But we had to keep on diverse. We were dropping containers to the resistance all the time, like, you know. And they dropped us. But the first job, they dropped blind. They had no idea what they were dropping. But this time, we sent a man over before us to get the lights set for us, for landing lights. And of course, when we jumped, we knew where we were going to drop. So we were lucky. We had no accidents whatsoever.
What do you remember about your own parachute drop?
Well, when you're dropping in France, you don't know what you're dropping into, do you? Just dropping on the ground. Yeah, I mean, you can describe it. So I suppose, what the hell am I that myself in for? Because you don't know if anybody's going to fire at you or what could happen, do you? Or are you being seen?
But did your parachute drop go smoothly?
Oh, yes, everybody's. Oh, yeah, well, it's all smoothly.
What did you land in?
In a field.
A cornfield?
No, only grass field.
What time of year was it?
It was in September, August 1943.
What happened to you once you landed?
Well, we landed, we buried our parachutes and then found the container, what had been dropped with us, to take in parts so everybody got something to carry. And we went back to the air hideout, and stopped there the rest of the night. And we could see the factory, what we were going to blow up.
Was your hideout exactly?
Only on top of a hill, in the trees, in the bushes. On top of a hill.
Just in the open?
No, in the forest, the woods, like, you know. But where we were, we could see the factory about 2 miles away.
What did they make in this factory?
Shell oil. For Rommel in North Africa. Freeze tanks, special oil. So it's very, very, you know. So anyhow, so I was about 19th, I suppose. We went down and built a factory up.
How long after you'd landed did you actually attack the factory?
About 3 days.
And what were you doing in those 3 days?
Well, we were making up all the charges, explosives. And making arrangements. Well, you and John went in one night to reconnoiter the way down and back. And just sort of hanging about, you might say. We couldn't get to you and John and reconnoiter the factory and find our way in, like.
And you were living off your own provisions that
had dropped? Oh, you were up and dropped with us, yes.
Were you in contact with the local resistance?
No. Just on our own then.
How did you feel about attacking it? Were you scared? Or?
No. We just put our rucksack on our back and walked in there. And we told me one more my officer said it to told the factory workers what we're going to do. We're going to blow the factory up. While he's doing that, myself and Jock Graham put our charge in the retort, and the other two put them in two more retorts. I'll show the photograph of you. Sorry. And we put them in, and the UA German told the people they got 10 minutes to get out. And we just pressed their, well, called it, and ran. 18 minutes afterwards, the first charge went up. We were about 2 or 3 fields away by then. went back to our hideout.
How big an explosion was it?
Oh, about 45 pound of explosive, I thought, each. Oh, yeah, because that's a big retorch, nearly as big as this room. We went round, you know, all conk, all the retort.
Were you far enough away to be out of danger?
Oh, yeah, we were far enough away, yeah, 18 minutes. We ran back to our hideout and rested the rest of the night. All that day, we were sort of sitting down, taking things steady. And about 8 o'clock at night, we heard the bloodhounds. So we picked up our belongings, walked away to get all six off together, and then went in twos.
Who did you go with?
Uri Dormer. We walked all that night. I only stopped much to have a shave, because Uri Dormer said, if we're going to get caught, we don't want to look like blooming tramps, we don't look like soldiers. And then we walked all that night. We were just going to walk into a village, and we heard the village dogs. So we knew that there's people about. We stepped off the road, and three French gendarmes went by on bicycles. We walked up the top of the hill, lay down for a rest, and then we woke up and we could see the bloodhounds in the village below us.
How far away was that?
Half a mile. Less than that, I suppose. So we walked up the top of the hill, down the other side, cross the road, up the back, in the field, and there was a German being dropped down the hill. We just left. We could see them. They couldn't see us because we were above them. And if it had been a straight road, we'd have got seen. It was a bend. So we just scootled out and run like bloody hell. And then all that day. And then that evening we asked a friendly, we took a chance and asked a Frenchman if there were any troops in the next village. That would be Chateau Chinon. He said no. He said the bus leaves the next morning to the nearest big king, which is Nevers, N-E-V-E-R-S. So we laid down at that village Chateau Chinon all night, got up, washed and shaved, dumped everything we didn't want, like revolvers and whatnot, walked in the village, got the bus, went to Nevers.
Who was in the chateau?
Nobody. Just it's a village. A village, Chateau Chinon. That's the way they call it. It's Chateau Chinon, it's the name of a village. Chateau Chinon, it's the name of a village. We caught this bus to Nevers. Went into an establishment for a drink. Asked for a cognac. Oh, the author did one.
Yeah, we should say you were pretending to be deaf and dumb.
Oh, I'm deaf and dumb, oh yes. Your ma asked for a cognac, and she said, you can't have no cognac. It's not the right day of the week. You can have a beer. So we had a beer. He went out for another beer, and she said, you can have a cognac now. He said, we're not allowed. She said, I know you're English. So she sent her boy to the station, found out time to train to Paris. And we walked out and got a train to Paris.
Was she friendly?
Oh, yeah, she was friendly, thank God. She said, I know you're English.
What else did she say?
That's all she said. I know you're English. You can have a cognac now, I know you're English. That's all she said. Sent her boy to the station in front of tons of trains for us.
So she could tell from the way Hugh Dormer spoke?
Well, might be that, or as we looked English, and we looked English not, but still.
Do you think you looked English?
Well, I suppose we did. We had everything we had on was French. You're not laid down. Not everything we had was French. Even our suit was French, made it to measure. And we got to Paris. We were given a dress to go to as a safe house. And we John went to his. And it's a shop. And they were closed. So I went to mine. That was mine outside of Paris. And they knew nothing at all about us. So we had to get right back into Paris again. And it's getting near curfew time. So we don't know what to do. But then Uri Dormer remembered an hotel he knew before the war. He can only travel a lot, see? And we're lucky. He recognised Uri Dormer. And he put up for the night. Next day, we went to a black market restaurant for a meal. Came back. He sent me to bed and borrowed my shoes. All he had was army blimpfuss. That's what he had, army blimpfuss. That's what he had. So he borrowed my shoes and made contact with his agent.
With his what?
With his safe house person. And about 4:30, I suppose, in the afternoon, we went out to the hotel. He's following somebody. Who he's following, I don't know. And we walked into a train together. That's it. How was that? So we went to our safe house. That's a place called Sèvres, outside of Paris. Stayed there for about 5 to 6 days, I suppose. What arrangements made to get us back to England. Went down to the station at Car du Nord in Paris. From there we went down to, right down to Pyrenees, or down to a place called Narbonne. And that's the only place only time I was frightened. It went me across what they call a demarcation line. That's 50 French and nine. And they checked my identity card. And I had to keep quiet. I just shrugged my shoulder and he said something, but what he said I don't know, but you were doing this in the book. Well, you were doing this, said he asked you, is that the sort of you have where you come from, your identity card? And that's the only time I was really scared. If I opened my mouth, I've had it.
This is on the train,
on
journey?
On the train, yeah. What you call a demarcation line, see? And then I showed my shirt and he sort of, you know that.
This was a Frenchman?
Oh, no, German. And then we got as far as Narbonne. And there we went into a... First story, is we went into a church. Into a picture race. And changed shoes. He had a pair of brand new shoes on. It's hurting him. So we changed shoes. He could wear mine because mine was stretched. So he went and we changed shoes in the cinema. That's a laugh, bitterly, but still. Then from there we went to Perpignan and picked the guide up. There's four of us.
How would you arrange the guide?
Well, that's all done for us. That's what we, when we was in Paris, that's all the arrangements were being made for, you see, all the time we was in Paris. And
who had made the arrangements?
Oh, the SOE, the assistant did that for us. They'd done all that for us. So.
Do you remember any names of people who helped you?
Nothing at all, no. But I'll say there's four of us, myself, Harry Dormer, and two more who we knew in there, who were originally one of the ten, if you understand, don't you? Two of the ten. They went, oh, they'll do another job. They didn't do it. But after we walked about 2 miles, the guide left us and came back with four more people. Two Frenchmen, two Frenchwomen with suitcases.
Who were they?
They were their water operators, you know, the restrictions, like, you know, and couriers. And they, I mean, they've been through it, they haven't, admittedly. But so, when we crossed the Pyrenees, we had to help the women. I was taking sure to carry suitcases, beside all their own gear.
So it was tough?
Yeah. 3 nights it took us.
Was there snow?
No. Rain one night. But you only walk at night time, you see.
What time of year was this?
It'd be September. About September the, roughly speaking, 11th. And I said it took us 3 nights. Now from there we went to Spain, ended up there for one night in a farmhouse, and then they come and picked us up by car, took us to Barcelona.
Who took you?
The Spanish people.
Spanish officials?
Well, somebody, yeah, Spanish officials, I suppose. Took us to Barcelona to the embassy, or the consul, is it? Consul, them there.
Consulate.
Yeah. And we stopped there one night, we had our photographs taken for passports. Next day we went to Madrid by car. One night in Madrid, next morning they took us to Gibraltar by train.
Did you have any problems in Spain?
No, nothing at all. No, just do as you're told, that's all I was doing it. No trouble whatsoever.
Did Hugh Dormer speak Spanish?
No. But then we got to Gibraltar. Huey Dormer went back the same night.
Went back where?
To England. On the 19th of September he went back.
On a plane?
Yeah. I stayed in Gibraltar for about 4 days, 3 or 4 days.
Why was that?
Well, another train available to take me, another plane to take me back. I got one on the 22nd, which means I landed into England on the 23rd of September.
Where did you land?
Bristol. So we were gone 37 days altogether.
And had the mission been entirely successful?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. We didn't even see the Fianna Fáil, did you?
But you and Hugh Dahmer were the only ones
who got back. Only two got back, yeah. Out of seven.
The others were caught by the...
Four got caught by dogs, and the one we sent over before us, he got caught in Paris. In what you call a safe house.
What happened to you once you got back to Britain?
Well, I went back to headquarters in London, Baker Street. And they sent me on leave again, as usual. Then I went back to Box Hill. And then...
For what purpose?
Well, just hanging about. No, there's any more jobs. Not, but there's no more jobs for me in here. He said, no. He always went back to his regiment.
And got, what regiment had he come from?
In the Irish Guards. He got killed in D-Day. I went across to Italy in 1944 to... Still in the SOE to teach these people parachute jumping in Italy. In Italy.
As an instructor?
Yeah. Hmm.
So you were teaching agents to parachute?
Yeah.
Whereabouts was that?
Bari.
What kind of people were there?
Well, mostly women, funny part of it. And then my nerve went. I lost my nerve.
You lost your nerve for parachuting.
Yeah, and I went back to the artillery.
How had you lost your nerve for parachuting? Just through an accident?
No, just my nerve went. That's all I was saying, you know. I said, I'm not going to jump. I didn't jump. So I went back to the artillery, finishing in Italy with the artillery, till the war finished.